Today's episode of the Film Stage Roundtable is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. This is the spin-off podcast to the Film Stage Show, which is brought to you by filmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Bill Graham.
Woo!
And Michael Snydell.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Don't ask me why. I just this moment realized that I may have left a bowl of cereal half-eaten on my desk at work.
Okay.
And now, that's going to hang over me until I go to work tomorrow and find a half-eaten bowl of cereal filled with milk on my desk at work. Oh, man. That's a rough way to start an episode. Anyway. It's a Wednesday, too. There's no reason for this to be going this poorly already. So this is the spin-off podcast of the Film Stage Show. We don't do reviews here. We talk about random topics related to film culture as a whole. We cobbled this together over the last 2 days. We didn't ask for anyone's help from online, so there will be no Rockin' Robin sections today. We will be talking about two different topics related to A new release coming out, and B, the Christmas season. So, I hope you all are prepared for that. Let me tell everyone at home, we can be found on Twitter at Brian J. Oh, it's a bad day, guys. This is all going to hell. At Film Stage Show, Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show, email us podcast@thefilmstage.com, and give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. That is that. You can use all of those different ways to offer up different things for us to talk about. We have a couple in the queue, and we look forward to speaking about those after the new year. But beyond that, gentlemen, are we prepared to talk about the two topics that we had selected for today?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Excellent. Well, before we get into that, let us talk for a moment about Mubi, the streaming online cinema, where every day their curators select a single film to be featured. You will have 30 days to watch that film. After those 30 days, it disappears, but it's okay, because every day a new film is entered, and so you will always have a selection of 30 films to watch. They focus primarily on independent and foreign films, so you will be finding things there that you will not be finding on other streaming services. And, as I reported during our very controversial La La Land episode, Mubi is now available on Roku. So if you have a Roku box or Roku TV like I do, you can now watch Mubi without having to mirror or plug something else in. So Mubi is now more convenient than ever. So go to mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial and give Mubi a shot on us. Mubi. Still no tagline. All right. Our first topic today is inspired by the release of Assassin's Creed, starring Michael Fassbender. We, as critics, have to watch a lot of movies, but I think there's nothing that critics really, really are more terrified of than a video game adaptation. But we're going to try to find the silver lining in that dark cloud hanging over Hollywood. So we are going to be talking about our favorite video game adaptations. That song just like make you want to get in a bar fight?
Oh yes,
I need a glow stick right now.
Just do like nothing but rave style hand dancing. Oh man, so that God. Is the theme music from Mortal Kombat, a movie that hopefully none of us will be talking about. because my God, I had a friend who was obsessed with that movie as a kid, and I stopped going over to his house. That's how bad that movie was, even to me, a child. So,
by the way, the follow-up to that film has a 3% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Bill,
Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Movie drunk.
Insane.
Yeah, it is. The fact that it has 3% is mind-boggling because it should have zero.
The sequel is just so bad.
Neither one is good. Objectively,
but like the first
films.
One. The first one is like enjoyable in a really dumb way. The second one is just straight up awful.
Yeah. The explosion effects in that movie are amazing.
We'll talk about the worst video game movies another time. We're here to talk about our favorite video game adaptations. So this should be an interesting conversation. Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off? What is, in your opinion, the best video game adaptation, and why is it the best video game adaptation?
So I'm going to mention something that is a little unfair to start with, just to get it out of the way, and that would be Pokemon, the first movie. I think that's unfair because, yes, it's based on a video game, but it is also the exact same fucking animation style that the cartoon series was based on as well. And I just don't think that that's fair. I don't think that you can have like a long running animated TV show and then come out with a movie based on that. And like that's just not fair. So
all right,
that
well,
was
that's, good. That's just like your opinion, man.
Uh-oh.
So Brian.
Is that what you picked, Brian?
Here's a peek behind the curtain. Michael Snydell hit me up on Slack not an hour ago and asked if I would accept Pokemon, the first movie,
selection. Did he mention that in the group, or did he only send that?
He only sent it to me.
Well, I'm trying not to tell everyone what I pick.
Right, because half the fun is the surprise. Yeah.
But then it's great when you then slag on something that then I am going to talk about.
You asshole. Well,
you'll have your moment, Mike, but that's why Michael is cracking up. So, Bill, what is the movie that you did choose?
Okay. I chose Street Fighter. Yes.
Okay.
I chose Street Fighter. This is a movie that I got free when I bought Street Fighter 2 on PC, and it came with the VHS copy of it. And I probably watched that damn thing, I'd say a good 40 times. It was again, going back to my long history of never buying movies, it was one of the few VHS tapes that I actually owned. For a long time, and this is not a good movie by any means, and even as a stretch of it being an adaptation of a video game, it's kind of a terrible representation of that as well. When they turned one of the characters into Blanka, who is this green electric beast monster dude in the video games, they don't really have a whole lot of, like, it's funny that some of the first adaptations were the video games with the least backstory whatsoever. Like, yeah. They were just straight up fighting games. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, and fucking Super Mario Bros. It's like, are you serious? You chose, like, not Zelda, not any of these other things that actually have like a storyline behind them or anything like that. Nope. Sure. The film is objectively kind of terrible, but it has a star cast that is pretty damn ridiculous. Whether it's Jean-Claude Van Damme near the height of his kind of action fame, Raul Julia, one of his, I believe, last performances.
Yeah.
Also Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, Kylie Minogue. And then Wes Studi is in this damn film as well. It's got one of my favorite lines in probably cinema history, when a guy is watching a live feed of something barreling towards them, and he goes, "Quick, change the channel." And you're just like, "No, that's not how life works, man."
That is awesome.
Yeah, this movie is absolutely insane. It is insane to watch. But look, Guile was one of my favorite characters. Guile is played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Guile was one of my favorite characters in the video game. And to have someone at the time as big of a name as Jean-Claude Van Damme play that character and just kind of give him just kind of this kick-ass moment or two really just kind of made my whole year. And yeah, that's a
big year for you.
Yeah. Look, like it is what it is. It's a terrible movie, but I love it. I love all of its stupidity. I love all of its just like revel in trying to put these people together in ways that just like there's just no backstory, and they just came up with something, and I love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bill, did you ever see the, I don't know if it's a sequel or a reboot, the Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li?
Are you talking about you're talking about the animated film, right?
No.
No. Uh-oh.
I'm talking about the movie that stars Chris Klein and Neil McDonough.
I don't think I saw that. No.
Oh my God. Okay, you finish up what you're going to say, and then I'm going to cede 2 minutes of my time to play a clip for us.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
Oh, are you okay? So, are you done with your?
Yeah, time? I'm done.
So, Chris Klein plays a like Interpol agent who speaks in nothing but one-liners. So, I found a montage, and I'm going to play it for us now.
Oh shit.
You just inherited a big problem. Call me Nash.
Maya Sunyi, Bangkok GH.
New Year's come early?
We got a tip at 6 this morning. Someone wanted us to know this was here. Heads of every crime family. Signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah, Last Supper. And he serves them their own heads.
Get used to it. Your new roommates.
Those bodies piled up in the harbor. They were the heads of the ruling crime families of Bangkok, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh, right? And now they're all dead except for one. His name's Bison. I've tracked him through 11 major cities on 4 continents and never come close, not once. This guy walks through the raindrops.
Oh, Jesus.
Bison's bringing crime into the neighborhoods to drive the land value down and then is buying it back up wholesale. We gotta move on then.
Okay, we're on it. Come with me.
Irate pole dancer not happy with her tip sets off Armageddon. Keep spitballing.
What? Your head's at. What?
Just I think my favorite one is coming up.
Some of the most dangerous players in Bangkok and then bails out like she's got a plane to catch. She's making a statement. Hi.
Nash out!
Yes!
We got him on radar! We gotta move now!
Bison's got a girl with him!
What girl?
His daughter! Her name's
Okay.
It's your first time?
Nah. I've been there before.
I can imagine.
Nice work. Hey, you better get out of here.
How's aggressive working for you?
Shut up.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, wait a minute, Maya. That's it?
So yes, that is the wonder that is Chris Klein in the second Street Fighter movie / reboot / whatever.
I wish Keanu Reeves was in that role.
My favorite is that They only do it once in the montage I found, but his name is Nash, if you didn't pick up on that. And there are numerous times where he just screams into something, like a radio, Nash out, and then like throws it away. It is fantastic. Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, a objectively horrible movie. All right, Michael Snydell.
What'd you pick, Michael?
Well, Bill, what I picked was Pokemon the first movie.
Yeah.
or Mewtwo Strikes Back, because to be fair, Bill has some points about Pokemon the first movie, because it is 75 minutes, which means Bill should actually love it. But it's Pokemon the first movie is made up of Mewtwo Strikes Back, Pikachu's Vacation. Guys, I really should have this up right now. Hold on one second. Pikachu's Vacation, which is a 21-minute episode, and then Origin of Mewtwo. So, like, it is a 75-minute movie. But the reason I want to mention it is because it was actually weirdly kind of a formative experience for young me, in the sense of I was very into Pokemon at the time.
And who wasn't? Who the fuck was?
Sure. I was.
Yeah, if you were the right age and you weren't into Pokemon at that time, there was probably something wrong with you.
Sure, I was just that perfect age group, as we're saying. And I went to my local Graham Cracker, and I don't know if Graham Cracker's familiar to you guys, but
I don't know what the fuck. All right,
fine.
Is.
That's just a chain of comic. Chain of comic shops.
Okay.
Okay. And you're talking about a cracker, and I'm just like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Is that Chicago slang for like a square building?
All right. Anyway,
a brown building.
I went to my local Graham Cracker. You jerk. And I got. They had the Japanese version, the subtitle version of Pokemon the first movie, like a bootleg VHS. And I bought it.
No, Michael.
And I bought it, and
answer
literally
me
what
one question.
Felt
like, how much sex was in it?
No, there was no sex. But that's what I'm
there
getting.
There was 2 hours
keep
of footage after.
Everything I'm trying to get into. So it's the same movie as the U.S. movie, except obviously in Japanese and. Also more violent. So this was like, I was 8 years old at the time when I first got this. And then the English movie came out a year later. And this was my first experience with understanding that different countries do different edits. And that like not everyone saw the same movie. So Pokemon the first movie, like as a whole, it's pretty ridiculous. Besides for the fact like... It begins with like a scene that is unusually dark for what is ostensibly a kid's movie, in the sense of that Mewtwo, one of the Pokemon, like there's a scene at the beginning in a sterile factory where Mewtwo like goes into this like murky existentialist like monologue and then kills everyone in this laboratory.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And it's really messed up, and like being really young, I have to be honest, it was kind of traumatizing, and in the same way, like, and it felt kind of forbidden in the same way. That was right around the time where I would sneak in time to watch Adult Swim, and before my mom like saw what was on there and freaked out, because I had parents who freaked out about content, and I had to sneak R-rated movies and PG-13 movies at that impressionable young age. I guess the thing about it is it's something that's stuck in my mind, just because it was my first experience with understanding that that there's a very large difference between how different countries present things. And even if it's just the presence of blood in one scene, like it was still something that made that film feel a lot darker. And this is a film, granted, that pretty much has the exact same ending as Guardians of the Galaxy, where like tears resurrect Ash, like the tears of Pokemon. Like, it's an insane last season that's like so like sentimental, but just because it was in Japanese and because it was, you know, this bootleg VHS, like it was just this, you know, forbidden fruit at that young of an age. So mm-hmm.
I remember that Toonami on Cartoon Network.
Sure.
Yeah, they used to like air at like 10 o'clock at night the uncut versions of the anime shows that they would do in the afternoon.
Sure.
And it really was just like, oh, here's blood. Like, yep. We digitally removed the blood from this scene. The character still fucking dies, but there's some blood at the corner of his mouth in this scene now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, yeah, getting that, like, forbidden thing, it was actually kind of a letdown for me. I was expecting, like, some major changes, like, more people to die, like, someone to get torn apart. But nope, it was just like, oh, there's blood.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit pervier. That's definitely one thing.
There's definitely a wealth of other anime out there for you, Brian. Don't worry.
I was about to say, I had some fucked up friends in college. I have seen some shit, and I never need to revisit that memory. Legend of the Overfiend. That's all I will say.
I have no idea. No.
Don't
want to.
Don't Google it. Ladies and gentlemen listening at home, don't Google it.
So, you say you're going to
put that in the show notes.
And now here's a clip. So mine is going to be a movie that we have mentioned one or two times. Michael seems to think that he mentions this movie all the time. Bill, maybe you can help settle this argument. I don't think he's ever really mentioned it. I know I brought it up. It's Silent Hill.
He's mentioned it, I think, once or twice.
Because I brought it up during our conversation about foreign directors that we wish had had more success here on the American shores.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
It is directed by Christoph Gans. And, yeah, there was a person, Keith Calder on Twitter today, said that for a video game movie to be successful, it had to abandon elements that were put in specifically to make gameplay more fun. And I feel like Silent Hill is a perfect exploration of that, because like most Japanese made survival horror games, there's like no mechanics in Silent Hill, the video game. You are uh-huh. just wandering around in the mist and
you get shit scared out of you.
Yeah, like its main mechanic, quote unquote, is that the handling is terrible. So you have a lot of trouble controlling your character, which adds to the terror. The movie does the only thing that it can do. It takes the lore of Silent Hill and the atmosphere and then tells a story. I'm not going to say it tells it super well, but it tells it well enough. And I think that untethering itself from the mission-based concepts that a lot of these movies still somehow adhere to, and allowing itself to be sort of
totally incoherent.
What was that?
Allowing itself to be totally incoherent.
Yeah. I think there's something a little beautiful about how nuts this movie gets. I haven't seen it in a while, but whenever someone brings up the concept of video game movies, I say, you know, they almost had it right with Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Because all you need is disturbing images and people drawn to Silent Hill, this malevolent town shrouded in smoke. And I think that Silent Hill, the movie, comes very close to that. Nowhere near as scary as playing Silent Hill, the video game. But very few things in life are. That video game nearly killed me.
There's some great body horror in that movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. And just like, Silent Hill is like ripe with cinematically weird images, like Pyramid Head and
uh-huh.
the four-legged bipedal things. And one of the most terrifying things that ever happened to me was walking in Silent Hill, the game, through like a department store. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Someone glued two halves of a mannequin together so that there's legs on the top and legs on the bottom. And then it started kicking me with its top legs, and I just freaked the fuck out. So, yeah, great. Silent Hill, directed by Christoph Gans, who, you know, he had a version of Beauty and the Beast come out this year. I'm sure no one has heard of it. But I hope
he's got big stars.
Yeah,
it does. Leia Sado and
Vincent Cassell.
Yeah, maybe one day, maybe that could be what our drunk cast is.
We should definitely do Warcraft instead. Is nobody going to mention Warcraft? I'll have to mention Warcraft.
Holy shit! Yeah, that's actually.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've already gone to bat for this film podcast.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed all of the orc parts. If they would have struck out all the human roles in that film, I would have been perfectly happy to see that film 2, 3, 4 more times in theaters. I think the orc stuff in Warcraft is absolutely fantastic. But it's a shame.
You wouldn't have the weird like dancing spell casting of Ben Foster.
Ben Foster needs to get the fuck out of that movie. Holy shit, he is a nightmare.
the main character in that, the human main character with those like crazy eyes.
Yeah.
And his weird way of
Travis Fimmel.
Yeah.
Does Foster play it as a hyped up speed addict as well?
Yes, basically.
Yeah.
He's hopped up on that Mountain Dew magic.
I like that dude, but that dude's range needs some expanding.
He honestly seems like he took a big hit of meth before they called action.
He does.
Just like day of, like every action.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, that's how Hell or High Water was, too.
Oh, we're talking about Travis Fimmel, not Ben Foster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ben Foster is weirdly subdued in this movie.
He is. But yeah, that was definitely like, man, I remember I watched it with two of my friends and we talked about it for about an hour and a half afterwards. And we were just having a blast just talking about all the crazy things they do in that film, but also just like how good the orc storyline was. And it's just such a shame that so many people, it got such bad reviews that so many people just blew it right off. I think that's definitely a film that people are going to watch over time and be like, hey, sure, there's actually like a legitimately good movie in the middle of that.
I think the stuff that surrounds it is crazy enough to be okay still.
Is it fair to say that it could have like a John Carter of Mars type following?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's another film that was perfectly serviceable that got just trashed for whatever reason.
I never played a lot of Warcraft, so it didn't even really occur to me to do this as one of mine. But yeah, you make a good point. This was actually a very good film. Did I write the review for this? And did it go fresh for me? I can't remember.
I'm looking it up right now, Brad.
Okay, thank you. But yeah, I went and saw this with my wife for a press screening. And afterwards...
You gave it a C.
I gave it a C?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you go on
Rotten
Tomatoes?
Put your money where your mouth is.
So
look it up on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, see if I made it fresh. I'm pretty sure I made it fresh.
you would have been one of few.
One of the few fresh critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's at 28%.
I think they announced.
But yeah, we went and saw this. And then when it was over, we were walking out. And I'm like, am I crazy or was that like fucking fun? And she's like, man, that movie didn't give a shit who you were. It's like, get on my wavelength or get the shit out of the way. And I was I was cool with that.
Yeah, that movie is just all cocoa bananas.
I will say that my rating on Rotten Tomatoes is fresh. So, yeah, I gave it a fresh rating. Hoo boy. So, all right, well, that's it for our video game movies, unless anyone else has anything to add.
I do not.
The Tomb Raider soundtrack is great.
yes.
Son of a bitch.
So is the Mortal Kombat soundtrack as well. But yeah.
All right. Well, our next topic is Christmas movie memories.
Hey!
All right. So we're doing this a little different than you might be expecting, ladies and gentlemen at home. We are not going to be talking about Christmas movies, meaning movies that take place during Christmas or directly address Christmas. So, you know, you're not going to hear any of us talking about Die Hard or Office Christmas Party.
Gremlins.
Or It's a Wonderful Life.
Or It's a Wonderful Life. Have you guys rectified that yet?
I've already rectified it because I already saw it. Oh, I just didn't remember I saw it.
You remember that you saw the whole fucking movie. yes. So we're instead going to be talking about movies that we remember seeing around the holidays. Because when you come together over Christmas, you have two things. You have family and free time. And those things often result in movies. And sometimes the memories or the stories that follow are amazing. So let's talk about it. Bill, no, we started off with Bill last time. Let's give Michael Snydell a chance to walk in here and take over the show. So what is your Christmas movie memory?
Well, my Christmas movie memory is seeing The Departed on Christmas Day back in 06. And so I guess the best way to say this is in my family, every year we talk about seeing a movie, especially on Christmas Day. Like, it's always like, oh, what movie should we see on Christmas Day? It sounds good to see one. And then we usually don't end up seeing one. And so then I usually just get annoyed by people arguing about it for so long that I go downstairs, get drunk, and watch a movie by myself, which is lovely.
This topic gave you an existential crisis because you were straight up like, I fucking hate going to movies with people. I'd rather go alone. You literally said bah humbug at some point.
Well, so yeah, I mean, I guess there have been a few Christmas movies I've seen. I guess Marley and Me came out on Christmas, so apparently I must have seen that on Christmas. And you know, I saw Catch Me If You Can a long time ago, and you know, I remember that being a pleasant experience. But the one that comes to mind immediately was The Departed. And I went with my sister. I don't talk about my sister very often on here. My sister is about almost 10 years older than me. And then I went with my cousins. And let me tell you, I'm not sure if they have not seen any Scorsese or just were not familiar with this. But I have to say, it's not my favorite experience to watch Jack Nicholson snort coke off a naked woman's back next to my sister when I'm 15 years old. That's not my favorite situation. And that was the other thing. They had to get me in. Like, this was all my cousins were older than me, and we were going, and the whole time I'm like, oh fuck yes, I get to see The Departed. This is great. Like, for some reason they had heard that it was good and somehow didn't hear, you know, that it was insanely violent and also a movie from Scorsese, so every other, you know, word was four letters. So like, I was so excited being that young and getting to see The Departed, but it was an experience that was undercut by the fact that my sister especially was not expecting that movie at all. So the conversation after was like, it was like me and my cousin Wade being like, oh, that movie was freaking awesome. And everybody else was like, huh. So that's why I hate Christmas. No, not really. But that's probably the memory that most comes to my mind, other than watching Melancholia a few years ago, and you know, at 2 a.m. watching Melancholia on Christmas Day, like, talk about sending you into an existential crisis. So that was a good time too.
It's a time of warmth and coming together and like goodwill towards men,
about the end of the world.
And life is evil and it's only on earth and not for long.
Sure.
Jesus Christ, Michael. Okay, well, there's a dark insight into the mind and soul of Michael Snydell for everyone.
The charred soul. And that's why I hate La La Land.
Bill Graham, what about yourself?
So I want to mention a few films because they happened to release right around the Christmas time, but they weren't quite on Christmas. One of them was Pan's Labyrinth. That released on the 29th of December. So obviously, it wasn't possible for me to see that during Christmas. Although I do remember dragging my parents and that being a very formative kind of, I guess, New Year's film experience. But the one that I'm going to pick is it's Let the Right One In. And this film was a small minor release in when did it come out? I just had it pulled up. It was a small minor release here in the U.S. It did not go wide at any point.
And it's in 08.
It's in 08. And yeah. It opened on four screens in Los Angeles and New York, and it followed by a rollout in other U.S. cities. This film was a very, very small, limited release. I think it was in... I want to say like the Sundance Theater in Houston at the time, while I was living in, or while I was in college. And, what I ended up doing was what a lot of people end up doing, and they download it off the internet. And I burned it on a, onto a DVD, and around Christmas time every year, my family and I all get together over at my grandpa's, and then sometimes we would go over to my mom's. And my mom had a nice big screen TV and a lot of room and everything like that. And so a lot of times we would get together over there. And I remember we were watching the movie with my family. I somehow managed to talk them into watching a horror film, not only a horror film, but also a subtitled Swedish horror film. How I managed to do that, I'm not quite sure, but it was definitely an experience to, for once in their lives, to hear them not talk throughout a movie because they had to pay attention, otherwise they wouldn't have understood anything, right? So they were actually quiet. Usually I kind of dread watching new movies for me with my family outside of, you know, the theater experience. You know, usually they're okay during a theater, but when we're at the house, like, no, all bets are off. They're going to talk throughout the film. 'Cause, you know, that's what family does, and that's just kind of how my family does it. But yeah, so they sat down and watched the entire film with me. But I remember at one point, my Aunt Gracie, she's a screamer. And her scream is so loud and absurd. It frightens everyone around you, even though you know what's happening. You're like, oh my God, like, you're going to give me a heart attack from screaming that loud and that boisterously. And there's a couple of scenes in there in the film where she screamed out loud and then covered her eyes and was asking us, like, to tell us when to open her eyes. It was an adventure to watch that film with all of my family. One thing that actually ended up happening was they actually ended up enjoying it quite a bit. And I'm still very mystified about A, how I talked them into watching it, and B, how they even enjoyed it. Although that ended up being one of my favorite films of not only that year, but that decade and definitely since. But yeah, that was my experience with that film.
So I've got a couple. First of all, my brother and I, he is 22 right now. So 7 years younger than I, and I would always take him to movies. I remember very clearly, this isn't Christmas related, but it's a brief story, taking him and a friend of his to see, now I can't even remember the name of the movie. Michael Cera, Jonah Hill.
It's Superbad?
Superbad.
Superbad.
Yeah. I remember taking him to see Superbad, Because I was like, oh, it's those two, and it's, you know, it's funny, and it seems like it's going to be a funny movie. It's rated R, but how bad can it be? It can be pretty bad. And I think at the time, they were like 11? So, I remember going home with them after driving them to see it, and we're quoting it in the car all the way home. And as we pull into the driveway, I say, when Mom and Dad ask how the movie was, just say, it was all right, and drop it. So, yeah, because I'm pretty sure both of their parents would have murdered me. My brother and I went with my fiancé at the time last year to see the 70mm projection of Hateful Eight, which was awesome. Good family bonding experience. And, I'm wondering if did my sister and brother-in-law come with us to that? I think they may have. It's hard to remember, but I do have the book that they handed out at that screening still in my study.
Oh yeah, I still have that too.
Yeah.
Which one did you get? I got the Samuel L. Jackson.
Give me literally 2 seconds.
I got Channing.
Okay.
You got Channing.
I'm opening it right now.
See, that was such a spoiler spoiler that he was even in the movie. That it sucked. It sucked to know that he was in the movie and get halfway through and be like, I wonder when he's going to get in that movie.
I got Daisy Domergue.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. All
right. Actually, I have a second one. I wonder if it's still her.
Are you guys crazy about that movie?
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it. I saw it twice in theaters as well.
They are both Daisy Domergue. So nice. Anyway, so that was fun. But I think the most interesting time I've ever had at a movie over the Christmas holiday, and a memory that will forever be seared into my brain having to do with Christmas and movies, is the time that Christmas Day I was hanging out with my family and we were eating dinner and I was helping my mother to clear the table and she had talk radio on and there was a story about The Wolf of Wall Street, which had just come out that day. And I was planning on going and seeing it, like, without them. And she says, oh, that's Martin Scorsese's new film, right? I want to see that. I want to see that, my mother said. Now, I turn to her, like any young man would, and say, really? And she gives me this look and says, I grew up in the 70s. I have more right to Martin Scorsese than you do.
Oh, damn!
Which is, like, a crazy thing to hear from my mother, because you people don't know my mother, but she doesn't give a shit about anything. But I think that she took offense to me basically calling her, like, I guess, I don't know. But she's right. She's from Queens. She grew up in the 70s and the 60s and 70s. Like, she knows what he can do. So I was like, okay, well, I wanted to go see that. Maybe we should see it tomorrow. So she says, sure. So I'm with my brother Kevin and his friend Connor, who are the two people that I took to see Superbad. And we're out, we're getting lunch, and I'm like, guys, we should go see The Wolf of Wall Street today. I'll text Mom and Dad, and they can meet us at the theater. So I have my brother and his friend on one side of me, and my mother and my father on the other side. And no one is prepared. No one can possibly be prepared for what happens in the first 15 seconds of The Wolf of Wall Street, let alone the Bill murdering 2 hours and 59 minutes that follow that first minute.
And guess what? I loved it.
That's good. I'm glad. It's one of those movies that for you made that worthwhile.
Yes, so, it did.
Yeah, Wolf is goat.
It's a fucking fantastic movie. But so... I remember the act of seeing this movie in snippets, because obviously I remembered the whole film. But there were times when I would have to turn and look at the people around me, because my brother and his friend are laughing their asses off. And every once in a while a joke will happen and I'll just turn to them and be like, oh my God, that was great. And they're like, yeah. And then I'll turn to the other side of me, where my 60-ish parents are sitting. My mother, a doctor and former teacher from Queens, New York, and my father, who is, I believe, the first or second most powerful lawyer in the entirety of NASA.
Okay.
Sitting there watching this movie conservative to their core, Catholic. And my mother has this look on her face that is a cross between utter disgust and pure delight. And my father is laughing his ass off so hard that I think that most of my mother's disgust was actually stemming from the fact that the four of us men were just dying around her. And then there were the more shocking and horrifying moments, not of the movie, but of the experience of sitting next to my mother while watching it, where she would turn to me and say, "Why are you laughing at that?"
Oh, Jesus.
Can you give a specific example and bring us into this experience even further, Brian?
Okay, well, actually, this is the best part. So, you know the point in the movie when he's talking about Quaaludes?
Yeah.
He's like, "You fucking people probably don't even remember Quaaludes, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "You can't even get them anymore. You people are shit out of luck." And my mother, when he's done this story, turns to me and says, "You know, I was in charge of a doctor's office around then, so I didn't need him to tell me what Quaaludes were." And there's just like this pregnant pause. So now, forever, I don't know if my mother was secretly trying to tell me that she'd taken Quaaludes, or she was just saying, "I know more about drugs than you." But either way, it was very disturbing. But there's just like moments in the movie when, like, some crazy sexual escapade would happen and everyone's laughing, and my mother just turns to me and says, "Why are you laughing at that?" As though to say, do you really
feel
have,
shame?
Yeah. She's either trying to shame me for finding it funny, or she's
Repent.
Trying to, like, goad me into admitting my own knowledge of things. And, like, you know how, like, your parents will be like, "So I heard about this thing that kids are doing, you know, where they, like, light alcohol on fire and throw it into their friend's hair. Like, have you heard about that?" And obviously they're waiting for you to say, "No, Mom, I've never heard of, like, spit lighting. No, I've never heard of that at all." Because they want to know if you're doing it.
Well, so, you know, that brings up one of my favorite memories when my dad came down to college when I turned 21, and he was taking me out for, like, my big first, like, public drink. And we went to the bar and I got a Jack and Coke, and he was like, "How do you know about that?" And I was just like, in college right now.
Oh my god. Yeah, well, it's like that times 1,000 for this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, he'll be talking about banging prostitutes and the different levels of prostitute and it just got dark. It got real dark. And, like, again, it was like this kind of modulation between my mother being cool with it and then her weaponizing it against me. And then when it's over, we all stand up and my mother is listening to my father, my brother, his friend, and I all laughing, and she just says, "You people are sick," with a laugh. And then the best part of the story is that at the end of the night, and from every night that I've been in Houston since then to visit them, every time I borrow their car to take it out for the night with my friends, they say, "Be careful." I say, "Don't worry, I'll return it. I won't get a scratch on it."
Mm-hmm.
Because in the movie, when that is said, we get the vision of a just smashed up to shit Lamborghini. So thank you, Martin Scorsese. You gave me one of the most awkward cinematic experiences of my life, but you also gave my family a really good in-joke. So that's my Christmas movie memory. I don't know that anything could ever supplant it. And with that out of the way, I think I really want to go watch Wolf of Wall Street now.
Yeah.
Just stay up until midnight watching Wolf of Wall Street.
Good episode, guys.
That was very cathartic.
It was. I was gonna spring a question on you two just to see how you reacted to wrap up.
Go for it.
All right, who's your favorite cinematic Scrooge?
Cinematic Scrooge.
Yeah. Who's your favorite actor?
Can I say Bill Murray in Groundhog Day?
I guess you could say that. I don't think that counts. I'm talking about like real, honest to God, I am playing Scrooge.
Oh, fuck.
I mean, off the top of my head, maybe Mr. Lebowski. Because that guy is just a pure and utter asshole.
But he's not playing the character of Scrooge.
You mean...
I thought your literal favorite cinematic incantation of Scrooge.
Okay. I have no idea. Michael Caine
from the Muppet one.
Yeah, I'm doing Michael Caine from the Muppet one. That's what I was looking up to make sure it was Michael Caine.
I will say Alistair Sim. He is the best. So if you can find the 1951 version of A Christmas Carol, check it out.
Sure.
Yeah. Bill, you got one, or are you taking a bye on this one?
Yeah, I'd take a bye on that one.
All right. Well, that's all for today. It's been a pleasure. Again, if you all at home have any ideas on things that you would like us to talk about, write in a letter, send it to the North Pole. Make sure you get it there before Christmas Eve, because I'm depending on Santa to deliver your suggestions to me. So, that is that. You can find us again on Twitter at Filmstage Show. You can email us podcast@filmstage.com. You can comment and rate on us on iTunes. And never forget that we are brought to you by MUBI, the streaming online cinema. MUBI is currently doing a bonkers 80s musical review. Don't miss that. You also can still watch those great Jackie Chan films that we were talking about earlier. And if you have a Roku, you can watch them all easier than ever by looking for the MUBI app in the Roku channel store. So, that's MUBI, MUBI.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial. Gentlemen, let us tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time that we speak. Michael Snydell.
You can find me on... on Twitter at Snydell. What am I doing? I guess watching more movies alone that make me question my own sanity. And I write things too. Most recently I wrote, about Tower and OJ Made in America for our documentary list. And I will have other stuff in our film stage coverage. And then I'll have my full list once I finish it. It'll probably be up in a couple days. I'm just putting the last touches on it and trying to see as many movies as possible. But you can probably see that on film stage.
All right, Bill Graham.
In between the meantime and New Year's, the Online Film Critics Society nominations should come out. We vote on the 24th. For our initial list, so you can find me talking about that on Twitter at CableBFG. I'll also have a review for the crazy bonkers film Passengers coming out here soon for the film stage, and something tells me my review is going to be rotten, but we'll find out. And you can also find me writing about movies on freshfiction.tv.
All right, and you can find me tweeting about the state of that bowl of cereal I left out tomorrow morning at Brian J. Rowan. And of course, you can find my writing on thefilmstage.com, where we are doing our end of year lists. And that's about it. Find me also at dearfilm.net. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a great week.